You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Tilevi, and tackling your questions this evening as we're Lucky Mguni from Benguela Global Fund Managers and Rikus Redis from PSG Wealth Santon. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Zwelakhe, Rikus, good to see you both here this evening. Zwelakhe, if I may start with you, it was a really good day today. The all share closing 2% up, the top 40 up 2.2%. But is this typical of a bear market rally where you get sucked in only to be spat out? Or were there genuine reasons, do you feel, for the gains that we saw?
Yeah, I think there were some positives in around the country. I mean, we saw last week that we got a bit of a positive outlook on the ratings side. But I also think that today was a day when we saw the rand strengthening a bit. And I think it may be symbolic of foreigners maybe trying to take advantage of our attractive market. In particular, the financial sector was quite strong today. So that's where our analysis has shown that there is value, biggest discount in our market.
Mm. Rikus, I mean, yeah, the banks had a really good day. Nedbank, Standard Bank, yeah, up around 5%. Do you think that's valid? Given that, I mean, the sentiment towards the sector only a couple of weeks ago was quite negative. And now you have confirmation that consumers are going to be facing horrendous price increases, what with the petrol price. You had oil going above $120 a barrel today. So, okay, the rand has strengthened a bit, so that's going to cushion it a little bit. But we are facing huge pressure en masse, and I wonder how well the banks are going to do through this period.
Well, I think it's sort of a function of interest rates. They not excluding today's increases in price, they'd all pulled back about, you know, the four major banks about 15%. So that was a good pullback. So maybe it's still that thought that when you're at the start of an interest rate increase cycle, then banking shares by definition will do well in the short term. As to today's move, I don't know. The US is closed and so is the UK, so maybe a bit over accentuated, but and possibly a bit of short covering as well for the market in general. So I think all of those things played into the kind of price increases we've seen over the past 2 days or two trading days. As to whether this is just a bear market rally or a turnaround, I don't know. You know, it's almost that I'm 100% right 50% of the time, so I'm not quite sure whether we're there yet or not. But we'll take it for what it is and just trade accordingly.
Yeah. So, are you happy to take it as it is, or are you a bit circumspect?
Yeah, what I wanted to say is that if you look at the more the pressure increases on the inflationary side, the more the potential for rate hikes. And if you look at where the banks have put money, the banks have put incrementally more money with the government rather than lending it to the real economy. So they may be benefiting from a potential for further rate hikes than what the market was expecting. Mm. I think that could be a potential trend that is maybe supporting the banks at the moment.
Okay. I mean, we had Peter Armitage just write a short note for us in the FM, and you're saying APSA was his pick. It's got a yield of 6%. This is really reasonable. I mean, would you say that across the board, that stripping out any noise about inflation or interest rates, that actually where the banks are trading at just makes them attractive given the dividend yields and the PE ratios, regardless?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, they look quite attractive, but I think you have to be cautious of the time frame. If you're thinking that in the short term, I mean, the prices could go anywhere, but if you think long term, hopefully the economy improves and if interest rates stay where they are, at least in forward, I think we could see a bit of attractiveness continuing in the banking sector. So certainly, from my perspective, I think they are attractive at current levels.
Okay. Rikus, I mean, you said you'll take it, the rally. I mean, would you buy any banking stocks, given all the factors that you have to take into account?
Look, I think if you're underweight the sector, And specifically, as I said, today was quite an extreme move, but let's say they pull back over the next 1 or 2 days. And if you're underweight the banks, then possibly not a bad entry point, considering all the exogenous factors that's weighing on the economy and the world economy in general. Don't expect fireworks, but longer term, it's probably not a bad entry level.
Yeah. I mean, what about some of the companies that came out with results today before I get to questions? Because the trading updates from companies like Bidvest were excellent. I mean, they said pretty much across the board they've had really good performances in the services division. You've seen economies opening up, so that's very good for what they provide to offices or restaurants or the hospitality industry. You saw Signia coming out with a really good trading update, Momentum Metropolitan. Who else am I leaving out here? Adcorp even did pretty well. Because, I mean, or are these now historical numbers and that you might not base too much expectation given that these are all results to March and maybe we're entering a somewhat trickier patch for the South African economy?
Well, I think the fact that it is a tricky patch is pretty much well known. Hopefully, it won't get trickier. But just reading through the Bidvest outlook, they still seem quite positive going forward. So yeah, maybe on the ground,
Not actually that bad.
unless there's a huge shock. They seem pretty comfortable that they'll be able to maintain the momentum they've built over the past, 6, 12 months.
So, Wilaki, were you quite cheered by any of those companies, and would you be buying them on the basis of the trading updates that you saw? So, Signia, Bidvest, Momentum Metropolitan, Adcorp.
I'd probably say we are owners in Bidvest as we speak. And I think Signia came up with numbers that I thought were quite impressive. And I do think that one has to be cautious to extrapolate the current momentum that is coming off a relatively low base for many of these companies to into the future. If we get a situation where there isn't any economic plan to actually perpetuate the momentum, I think we'll see quite a pullback in some of these company performances.
Okay, let's hope not. What about Sibanye? It came out the news with the news that Appian, which is the company that was going to sell it, the nickel assets it had intended to buy, is going ahead with a lawsuit against it for pulling out of the deal. And the question is, would the panel be able to give context of what possible result could come of the claim of Appian against Sibanye? Appreciated as always. We're lucky if I may stay with you. Do you think it has a chance? And what could Sibanye potentially be on the hook for?
Look, it's difficult to speculate, but I think it depends on what the contract says specifically. If there were terms that excluded that wall collapse, then Sibanye would get away with a without settlement. But if that those terms are not included, I certainly think that they'd be forced to buy the asset or pay up. There's no 2 ways about it.
Ricus, I mean, the market seems to have brushed it completely aside today. Or I don't know if Sibanye was reacting to other factors. Are you worried on their behalf? They do say that they are going to, that they're going to fight the claim and that they're quite convinced of the merits of their case.
Well, I hope they can settle it in some form or fashion going forward, but I think that asset, as far as being part of Sibanye, has obviously been written off. Now it's just how much it's going to cost Sibanye. So possibly to a certain extent, that's already in the price, and also why, apart from the strike, it's been underperforming the sort of other platinum counters over the past month or two. Operationally, I still think Sibanye is in a pretty good spot for the moment. Obviously, they're doing a lot of capital expense as they are buying new assets. So hopefully, the cycle continues to favor them. But yeah, as I said, the asset's not there anymore. It just it's just exactly what the damage cost, if any, is going to be.
Yeah. Just speaking of companies that have had to, stump up cash in order to get claims off their back, a la Glencore. They came out with that announcement last week, and I just thought I would ask you, because it's not often picked by many of the brokers on the show, and I was pulling up a four-year chart of Glencore against Anglo American and BHP Group today. And even though Glencore's actually done really well in the last 2 years, on a four-year basis, it's radically underperformed BHP and Anglo American, and probably because of this Department of Justice investigation, various investigations hanging over its head. And I wonder if now the share is going to be unleashed and all will be well, and everyone's quite happy to just brush their past misdeeds under the carpet, and it's the prospect of lots of money coming out of their coal business that is going to push the share price. So we're lucky. Have you had a look at this? Would it convince you to buy Glencore above the other mining groups?
Yeah, governance over here, I think it's clear. I mean, we saw the change of guard a little while ago, and I think that was in preparation of this kind of settlement. And I think with the new leadership, I think that the laundry's out for everybody to see, and they would probably do a lot of hard work to basically keep the business clean now, or on a cleaner level. What is fantastic about them is that they've got some great metals that are favored by the whole carbon decarbonization plan of the world. So if they stay clean, I think there could be a potential business that could outperform going forward.
Yeah. I'm sure the cynics are thinking, yeah, but Ivan Glasenberg still got 9% of the company. And yes, they've got all these metals that are going to help in the great green energy future, but they've got this massive coal business that's just printing money at the moment. But I absolutely take your points. Rick, has just given the momentum of Glencore, do you think it's got further to run?
I had it as a trading buy a number of months ago, and it sort of got where it was supposed to go. It still isn't my favorite mining holding. In other words, I'd rather be looking at something, you know, if you're talking about, shall we say, green economy metals, something like South 32 fits that bill as well, and price-wise is done just as well. So I would probably avoid, for the longer term, Glencore and its reputational risk. I mean, they have admitted guilt, and obviously it needs a change of culture. Change of culture is sometimes difficult to implement in the short term. So in that sense, if we are seeing a further rally in the resource sector, I'd probably go to a less damaged company, if I can call it that
way. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to sort of think that this, which was the essence of Glencore culture, has in a couple of years just, you know, fallen by the wayside. There's a question on Montauk Renewables. I know it's sort of an anorak stock, and it's a bit of an oddity for most people. But the question is, does the panel have a view on this energy player that has very low liquidity on the JSE? It had low sales last period, but high levels of inventory, which should benefit from higher gas prices now. So we're like, I'm not sure if you can even look at this, given that it is an illiquid share, and therefore, I don't know, out of your universe of stocks that you can buy for clients. But any thoughts?
So certainly, out of our universe, and I don't look at it closely, but I do think that the gas prices, I mean, they could benefit them going forward. It all depends on their ability to churn out volumes now. I think if they can get the volumes going, I think that they would be a big beneficiary of the current crisis in energy, particularly gas.
Yeah. Rickus, do you look at Montauk at all?
Yes, and I every time I look at it, I try and understand it again. But basically,
me too, snap. I have the exact same feeling about this company.
The one part is easy. I mean, it's landfill and getting energy from a bioresource, but the other side, which is the basically the ethanol credits that they trade in, that's a complex business, and those prices oscillate. Well, according to legislation, basically. I mean, when it was all going very well as far as those credits were concerned, until Trump came in and he changed legislation. Obviously, we've got a bunch of Democrats, so that may change again. But it's a huge part of their profit. So you can get really good years, and obviously with the current price of the share indicates that they're certainly in a sweet spot, but it can change in a moment. So it's an interesting one, but it's extremely volatile, and it would have been nice to trade it, except the volumes traded also very, very little.
There's a question that's come through on the parent or the former parent of Montauk, which is HCI, which came out with an update last week and seemed to be pretty good set of results. So the question is, kindly ask your panelists about the investment case for Quilter PLC for the long term. We'll get to that. And secondly, why is it that the shares of HCI go up and down every week? And what is their investment case? So I have to say the shares of Naspers and Prosus seem to be equally volatile, and what is their investment case, but we kind of know that. But HCI, Zwelakhe, do you have a look at this one? They've got a few assets to their belt or under their belt. But what for you is the overriding theme for HCI? Okay, I think Zwelakhe has frozen. So we shall get back to him in a moment. Rikus, if I may start with you.
Okay, as you said, they've got a number of other investments, and all of those have come out with decent results. We were talking about Montauk, obviously that will affect the share price. The hotels and gaming have come out with, well, I won't say good results, but a hell of an improved result. And then there's the optionality of the oil find on the coast of Namibia, and I think that's the key word, is optionality. Yeah. All of these investments, whether it be FDH, the NOB, they all seem to be doing well. But considering how the price has moved, I think that's mostly in the price at the moment. And it is pretty volatile, but as long as the underlying assets perform and they can manage their debt, which is still a problem, it's an interesting one, but I think it's run a little bit too hard and too quick in the short term.
So we were talking about HCI, so I'm not sure if you heard my question. The viewer's question was, why is it so volatile and what's your investment case? I mean, you could have picked it up for nothing in the depths of the pandemic, because there were genuine fears that HCI's debt would overwhelm it. And I think it's got, 2.6 billion rand at the center of the company that it's got to whittle down. But what the share price has done sort of suggests that the market is quite comfortable with its obligations. But do you think it's also maybe done too much too soon for the time being?
Yeah, it's not a share that I followed closely anymore. But I think what would have supported the share price was basically the expectation that some of the underlying businesses would actually benefit from a recovery. And I think that has been the case, and that has been supportive of the share price. But I certainly haven't followed lately what each of the underlyings have done. But it's not a share that I really like. I mean, I've got reservations about
why
this conglomerate structure.
Is it just the structure as opposed to the actual underlying investments?
Yeah, I think the structure is getting more and more complex, and the fact that they've got debt at the center that is dependent on the underlying, and some of them are a bit cyclical. I think it's a bit uncomfortable for me.
Okay, what about Quilter? I mean, you can't get more, I suppose, I wouldn't say stodgy, but conservative, I imagine, than Quilter. The question was, the investment case for Quilter for the long term. I mean, this is wholly exposed to the UK markets. It's the offshoot from the old mutual unbundling. So we're like, sticking with you, is this one that you look at?
Yeah, certainly. I think Quilter has done extremely well. I mean, I think they exceeded all our expectations when it comes to a few years ago, they invested in a new platform where they were able to do better administration. And I think that is worked very, very well for them. They've seen growth in clients in funds under administration, like by quite a significant margin. So certainly a business that continues to grow despite the volatility that we see in the market. So it's one that I think has got the leverage on that platform and can continue to extract value out of it.
I mean, having said that, and yeah, you read the results and they're really good, but the share has pretty much halved in the last year.
Yeah.
I mean, Rikus, does that mean that you actually would be buying Quilter on the cheap now and that the market has punished it unfairly?
Well, it seems that asset management in the UK is not exactly the best spot or the most favoured spot. I mean, just take a look at 91, as well run, as good results as Quilter, and price is just languishing at the moment. So I think it's on a historic basis or on an accounting basis, it's good value. Just my own method of investing. I don't like to buy things when they're down and languishing. I'd rather see a little bit of upturn in that sector. And I think it's to do with sentiment. I mean, economic sentiment in the UK with high interest rates, high inflation. I think asset management is not the thing people are looking at the moment. And until the market starts looking at those sectors and starts buying in, it could stay. Both of those shares, whether it be Quilter or 91, can stay at these levels for a while. So I'd rather pick my moment, but certainly quality companies, both of those.
Yeah. Yes, I suppose that's either, I guess, you're a value investor who likes to buy, you know, if they like the company, they'll pick up more stock as it declines. That's not your style. Right. Okay. I shall move on then. There's a question on the company that whether it's a value trap, and it's, can the panel explain the price of Rebosis A shares given their earnings potential of R3 a share? Is this a value trap? So we're like, I'm not sure when last you looked at Rebosis, if at all, and if you can answer this question.
I haven't looked at it in a long time. I hope Rikus has.
Rikus, help us out here.
I've looked at the graph and then I looked away. No, I haven't looked at Rebosis. I think considering where the other REITs and property companies are, there's probably hopefully value to be found there. They've had a very good day today. It's Rebosis, not something I'm looking at, but certainly some of the other property companies are looking interesting at these prices, although I don't think they're in a very good spot longer term, as I said, I'd prefer to cast my attention somewhere else rather than Rebosis.
I mean, perhaps the market has gotten it spectacularly wrong, and there are times when the market does. If you're expecting an unlock of R3 a share and the share is trading at R1.30, then it seems a no-brainer, but that may not be the case. A question on another property stock that's been through the ringer is Delta Properties. I don't know if this is a stock that either of you look at. It came out with results last week. And it's also, like Rebosis, has had not quite, I want to say shenanigans. I'm searching for the right word here. Issues with management and shareholders. It's got a new manager now. I think it's Sipho Mbanjwa. This is a company that expects to do a lot better. They also have government tenants. Do either of you look at this one? If we're looking at kind of recovery shares or shares that have had near-death experiences in the REIT sector?
Yeah, I certainly haven't looked at Delta either.
But sorry, also not on my watch.
I don't know what to say anymore. There's a question before I get to your stock picks on the Dow Jones, and it seems to be quite technical, and so bear with me while I bring it up. If one looks at the one-day and five-day graph of the Dow Index, it is noticeable that the volumes traded always spike at the end of the trading day. Why is this, and is it not open to price manipulation? And I suppose if it is, what's the implication? Do you look at the Dow Jones closely, and does it annoy you? Do you see price manipulation? Should we care?
Well, if there was price manipulation, the SEC would be the first to hop on the call and see who's manipulating the price. But I haven't looked at that kind of, at least not in that kind of light. Sometimes towards the end of the trade of the trading day, some of the traders close their positions, and you can see the volume spike as a result of that. But I certainly don't know if there's any specific reason like manipulation.
I mean, Rick, we have volume spikes in the JSE towards the close. So, I mean, surely that's common of all markets everywhere.
Yeah, and it's becoming more common. And I think the main reason, for something like the US markets, where close on 70% of trading is done by machines, so it's algorithmic trading. In other words, depending on who runs what time frame, end of day closing out for some of those guys, or not guys, some of the machines that do intraday trading will be obvious. And one sees it in the JSE as well, where most of the direction of the day's trading happens in the first half hour.
Yeah. Okay. Very quickly, your stock picks this evening. We like you. What are you buying?
I'm going with Sanlam again. I think it's a fantastic, well-done insurer with solid fundamentals in SAs, good capital management, very prudent management of the insurance book. They've moved to basically diversify their distribution model and lower the cost of distribution through MTN partnership. Recently they've entered into another partnership with Allianz. Certainly a business that is well run. I think that they've managed to turn what could have been a disaster in Shriram into an opportunity for growth. So I like Sanlam.
Yeah. Okay. Rikus, how about you?
Well, see, on Fridays, I'm sticking with the same share. It's called GRID, which is Gresham House Energy Storage. It's a UK company that does utility-type battery storage as an adjunct to your electricity suppliers. It's a long-term thing. I don't think the importance of that kind of storage is going to diminish in future. So this is something that I've got for a 5-10 year outlook rather than trying to pick something in this current volatile environment.
Okay. Well, we shall leave it there, gents. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nice to chat to you both. Zwelakhe Mnguni is from Benguela Global Fund Managers. Rikus Rieder is from PSG Wealth Sandton. And we'll be back tomorrow night. Excuse me, same time, same place. Have a good evening.